You're listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast with me, Rachel Bartlett. In this week's podcast, we gather expert tips on how to produce powerful data journalism without the price tag. For those newsrooms with limited resources, be it in terms of money, time or staff. This podcast was inspired by a presentation delivered by Nicholas Kayser-Brill, co-founder of Journalism Plus+, at the Digital Journalism World Conference in Singapore last week. Journalism Plus+ is behind the Data Wrapper tool, which helps journalists produce charts to visualise data, and he wants to dispel the myth that data journalism has to come with a serious cost.
Many news organizations believe that data journalism is this whole new thing for which they need to have to hire a full set of people and by investing a lot of tools. And the point I wanted to make was that it's absolutely not true, and that you can innovate and try new things without hiring anyone and without putting money in tools. You have a lot of free solutions that are out there for anyone to use. So really, I think this fear of saying data journalism is too expensive for me, this is just not true.
And data journalism does not always have to be centered around a large-scale project, as journalism academic Paul Bradshaw explains.
I think the mistake that a lot of people make with data journalism, with thinking that it's expensive, is that they associate data journalism with the most high-profile and famous examples. So they think of huge investigations like WikiLeaks and the MP's expenses, and they associate data journalism with investigative journalism or with huge scoops. But that's not necessarily the case. You know, I think data journalism can take as many shapes as journalism itself. It can be very quick and cheap and simple. It can be just as flawed and ill-informed as normal journalism. So I don't think data journalism has to be expensive in any way. It's just when we talk about it, we imagine these very famous examples and these big teams at organisations that have invested a lot of effort into it.
The Data Journalism Unit at Trinity Mirror Regionals, which launched earlier this year, produces a collection of daily data-driven news leads, which it sends across the network of regional newsrooms, highlighting their potential use, as well as producing more complete projects or resources, such as its recent Real Schools Guide. For David Otterwell, who runs the unit of three, soon to be four, data journalists, it's important to be selective about their workload to ensure a focus on quality over quantity.
I have to be quite brutal about what we can and can't do. I've always said I'd rather we do fewer things brilliantly than a huge number of things, you know, reasonably well. I think our job is to really add value, and if we're not doing that, there's no point to us being here. I think, for example, I mean, in the when we select the things that we're going to analyse as part of the news output, we're pretty ruthless. There's huge amounts of data out there, but we focus very much, and we have systems to make sure we focus very much on those bits of data which we know or we can be pretty sure are going to be fruitful and are going to generate news lines. The other thing, I have to be very careful about where our role starts and finishes. So, for example, in the generation of news, we pick out the lines, we provide visualizations, we analyze the data, we make life very easy for the individual centers, but we don't actually write the copy. That has to be done, as far as I can see, certainly at the moment, has to be done locally, shouldn't be done by us. We give them all the data and tools they need to write that story, but in terms of getting comments on it, setting it in context, having some sort of local knowledge which brings the story to life, that's at the moment not part of our role, and I think that's sensible because we're not trying to replace journalism, we're trying to feed journalism. So it's a very important part of the process, but not something we do. So I have to be quite clear about where our job starts and finishes.
Another key to keeping data projects manageable when working as a small team or with other limited resources is good preparation, as advised by Paul, who runs the Masters in Online Journalism at Birmingham University, is a visiting professor at City University London and founder of the Online Journalism blog, where he recently discussed this subject.
In some ways, I think there's some people have a false economy in the way that they approach journalism, and really it's you're more effective in the long term if you invest invested a little bit of time up front in that sort of preparation. And that can be anything from, for example, I mentioned social bookmarking in the blog post about this journalism processes as a way of making sure you can find data later on. I mentioned using spreadsheets as a way of keeping notes, because spreadsheets are very easy to reorder, to filter. So if you're trying to find things quickly, having it in a structured format allows you to drill down much more quickly in that sense. And it's really about being organized. You know, preparation is largely about being organized. And that also saves you from making mistakes as well, or at least reduces the chance of that.
In his conference presentation last week, Nicholas also highlighted the time that can be saved in not only seeing what others have already done in the area you're working on and making use of this where appropriate, but also by making sure data is stored in a way which can be easily used by others at your news outlet over time.
The first idea was to reuse the code base and all the technology that other people have been doing. The second one is really to structure the data. Because, and that's something that's not really obvious when we think about data journalism, but when you work with a database, you have to, investigate it. You have to know who was behind it, for which reason this data was aggregated in this way and not in another way. What are the biases in the data? And then you have to clean it, because maybe the formats that are used in this original database is not the right one. So you have this huge amount of work that goes in before you can even use the data. And if you have to do this work every time you want to use the data set, you're actually losing money. So my point was to structure all these data sets in a way that anyone in the news organization can reuse them whenever it's needed. So a Google Drive, Google Docs, I was saying, is what The Guardian is using. And you have actually two other solutions that have been made for the newsroom. One is the Panda project, which is an American solution, also open source. And the other one is Local Focus, that's being developed in the Netherlands.
The idea of making some of the data available to others to build on is something The Detail, an investigative news site in Northern Ireland, which launched 2.5 years ago, supports in its approach to data projects, as journalist Catherine Tawney explains.
We've worked with the Irish Times and some of their data projects that they've then used within their newspaper in terms of a smaller news story, but using our interactive mapping on their website. Some of the local papers, if I have a data project that I'm working on that I know I have regional breakdown, there are certain newspapers that that have maybe contacted in advance and said, look, are you interested in this? And to talk about the timing of when we launch that story and what I can do for them. Or we simply find that local papers go to our website, pick up the information that's of interest to them, and then they run a story further down the line. But it certainly is something that I think there are so many different layers to it and so many individual stories within our bigger stories that there's certainly a lot of scope for people to follow up on that.
Returning to the importance of preparation, and Paul also advised journalists to make sure they think ahead when submitting Freedom of Information requests, often the foundation of data journalism projects. Catherine also had some tips on how to make the first submission as effective as possible.
I certainly find that it's worth putting the time into researching what data there is, how it's held, what the column headings are, problems you may anticipate with confidential information, for example, and to tackle that as part of your FOI request, because the worst thing is putting your request in, that getting refused after 20 working days because of some quirk to do with the data. Then you have to lodge it again, and before you know it, you can be in quite a few months before you get your information. One thing I love to have the opportunity to do is to speak to the statisticians directly, and that's within government departments and in other organisations. I find that these people absolutely love you using their statistics, have a genuine interest in talking about how the data has been collected, what way it's held, and they can be really, really informative and helpful whenever you're trying to decide how to frame your request for information. So I think deciding what information you want, what other data sets you might feed in with that, and what kind of format you need that in, it is worth spending that time at the beginning to make sure that whenever you're sitting down there with your lovely big fresh spreadsheet with all the facts and figures in it, that you have everything you need there and you're not going to have to spend another few weeks or months pulling more information in.
One news outlet which Nicholas highlighted as a great example of effective data journalism was Finnish news site Helsingin Sanomat, As it happens, we recently caught up with one of the site's three data journalists, Ezra McKinnon, at a conference in Berlin, where he told us how the site was able to do projects on both long and short timescales.
The idea from the beginning was that we make news apps very fast. If there's some news event going on, we have to do something. We try to do whenever we do something, like in 2 or 3 hours, make it from scratch to finish. Then, of course, we have a longer projects as well, but this has been the idea since the beginning, that to react with visualizations, react with data, and get some data and make a visualization.
The quick production of data visualizations is supported by a collection of templates, he explained.
We have a style book in our internal wiki. We have a wiki which we use to have all the documents of the online news desk, and in there there's one page that contains all the templates we can apply faster. Basic data wrapper graphs and basic interactive maps and counters and that kind of thing. So the idea is that if a journalist has an idea, he or she can go to the style book and look at what's available in there. And then some of the tools are open source, like Timeline.js, and some we have built ourselves. And we try to not to make like individual projects. When we build something, we try to make it in such a way that we could use and reuse it. And of course, we do lots of, since I know quite well what kind of apps we have published so far, and whenever some journalist comes with an idea to me, I try to think, okay, if we take this app and modify it just a bit, would it be possible to have like something very fast?
As for external tools, there are an array of free resources which journalists can use to support various data journalism processes, from scraping and sorting data through to producing visual representations of the story. David highlighted Google as a valuable resource when it comes to free data tools. And for those interested in finding out more, Google this week launched a media tool site, which offers links to all its journalism-related tools. Paul also highlighted some of the free tools which often feature in a data journalist toolbox.
I think there are some basic types of tools that you should probably have. So, for example, even if you don't have a paid-for spreadsheet tool like Excel, you could at least use a free tool like Google Spreadsheets or OpenOffice. In terms of getting hold of data, there are free scraping tools. Outwit Hub has a free version. There's a new tool called import.io, which is very good as well. When it comes to visualizing the data, there are all sorts of free tools. Google Fusion Tables is very good for certain types of maps. Batch Geo is good for other types of maps. Open Heat Map is good for maps that need shapes. If you're doing charts, I really like DataMapper. I think that's very elegant, simple, and quick tool which is designed for journalists. And then you've got Tableau Public, which is incredibly powerful and free, but has a steeper learning curve. So it really depends what type of visualization you're trying to do. And then there's a tool called FreeDive, which will turn a Google spreadsheet into a searchable database. So you can publish that database and allow people to search the data to find out how it affects them. Those are just some of the free tools that spring to mind for me in terms of the basic level. And it comes down, as always, to what story you're doing. A story might not need any scraping. It might not need visualization. It will probably need spreadsheets at some point. And really, I would say, be driven by whatever problem your story presents, whatever problem you need to solve to tell it, and then look for a free tool which does that job, and look for the problem, because if you've had that problem, then other people are likely to have had it and tried to make a solution to it.
One important point made by a number of the interviewees for this podcast was the need for journalists not to let the idea of an amazing visualization take over and result in a graphic which fails to clearly tell the story at hand. Here's more from Catherine on that.
in terms of how complicated your projects can get. I mean, I've seen all the beautiful sort of snowfall projects and all the brilliant things done by organizations like the New York Times, and they're certainly something that, I think shows how really well data can be used. But that's not to say that smaller organizations and organizations like ours with less funding or less staff can't do really good stuff as well. And that's creating the different layers within your stories. It's having storytelling as your focus. I think sometimes I can personally get very bogged down in how I'm going to visualize my stories or how I can do them differently. And sometimes you have to realize that simple can be good, that as long as you get your key facts and figures across and that the story flows well, that you have human interest angles where that's relevant. We can do video interviews. We can do in-depth written interviews as well. So there is quite a lot of color and layer and texture that we can have in our stories, even though we don't have 20 staff working on graphics. And I think it's to still keep your eye on what your key findings are and what your news line is, really, and don't lose that by trying to get too distracted by visualization, which, while it can do a brilliant job, sometimes if it gets too complicated, you lose the actual story within that. So I think with very limited tools and in some cases limited time, you can still do brilliant things.
Another way to lighten the load, as highlighted in Nicholas's presentation, is to collaborate with others. But an important reminder from Paul is that when you do ask for help, make sure you have the right attitude.
To get things done, to get things done well, particularly with data journalism, you're likely to have to reach out to other people with very different skill sets. So you might need to work with developers, you might need to work with data analysts or statisticians or designers or developers. There's really a whole range of types of skills that you might need. It really varies from investigation or from story to story. And if you're going to have to do that, well, there has to be something in it for them as well. They might believe in the story, but there needs to be a dialogue. So I think if there isn't that dialogue, if you come to that project with an attitude, an egotistical attitude, that essentially you represent a particular brand and therefore people are going to fall before your feet, it isn't going to happen. These people are quite often in a lot of demand. They're very well paid, often better paid than journalists. So if they've got to give their time to help you out, they need to feel like this is a genuine collaboration and not them just jumping when you give the order.
In summary, there are a number of opportunities for news outlets which want to produce data journalism with limited resources. And not forgetting, of course, the importance of the journalists themselves, as David concludes.
The most important thing is staff. If I had the wrong staff, we would not have been able to do anything like what we have been able to do. I've been very lucky in that regard, and it's brought that home to me. I mean, I've previously worked on a news desk with quite a number of reporters, and it's still obviously important, but the smaller the team, the more important that is. Having a team with the right attitude and the right skills is absolutely vital. With the skills, yes, they can be learned, they can be trained, but the most important thing to me, and the thing that gets our work in papers and gets it on websites, is picking the right things. There's still no substitute for having the right ideas, having the right news values, and making the data and making the tools which are available fit that agenda, rather than doing it the other way around and thinking, oh, here's something that can make a beautiful graph, let's use it for something, but we don't know what. So being ruthless about the resources that we do have, having the right staff, and picking the right ideas, I think, are the three most important things in what we do.
For more on data journalism, see the journalism.co.uk topic page online, which features our most recent coverage on the subject. A link to the topic page can be found on our homepage. You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.